Radio. This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Yes, yes, everybody! You know the drill. We've started this podcast to help anyone who is remotely interested in trapping and neutering animals. We're the help we did not receive when we first wanted to get involved, and we want to be your new besties in the TNR world. I'm Alex, one of your hosts for this ride, and I am so grateful to have Adele by my side. Hey, Adele!
Hi, Alex. How are you doing today?
Good. Tell us where you're calling us from today.
I'm sitting at a cafe in London, trying to take a break from the craziness of TNR. How about you?
We get it. Yeah, I'm back in Vancouver, and I was gone for the last few episodes because I was in Nicaragua doing some spay and neuter there. So yeah, I'm happy to be back because going back into the craziness was crazy.
But and yeah, it wasn't the same without you.
Oh, well, I'm back now.
Cool. Well, let me introduce today's guest. So we're very excited to have Pallavi. They are the executive director of the Feline Foundation, which is in Mumbai in India. Pallavi joined the cat rescue world when she was in school and started rescuing kittens off the streets and getting them adopted. When she went to college in the US, she started volunteering at her local shelter and rescue, where she met her now kitty, Sam. After completing her BSc in animal science and MSc in animal public policy in the States, she returned to Mumbai, where she joined the Feline Foundation. So this organization works to help community cats in this city through population management, healthcare initiatives, and community involvement. And to date, they've sterilized over 14,000 cats and treated over 45,000 cats and dogs in Mumbai. Welcome to the show, and thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. Wow, those are some impressive numbers. I'm really excited to have this conversation today. But we do like to start like the conversation gently. So I don't know if it's really gentle, but anyway. Pallavi, when did you first start thinking about animal rights?
Well, both my parents are animal lovers. So I'm pretty much my whole life, I guess. Yeah, I've been interested in animals since I was a really small child. So.
Aww. And then I guess you said that you started rescuing kittens off the streets and getting them adopted when you were in school, right?
Yeah, my parents found that really annoying. So,
of course. How did you start doing that, especially like in college? Like, what happened?
Well, during school, I would just find kittens around and bring them home and somehow managed to get them adopted. It's always a bit dicey here to actually find an adopter, but I somehow managed to like find adopters. Also, because I had, you know, sort of like a deadline, you know, because my parents would not want the kittens to stay home for too long because it's a lot, right, to have kittens running around the house. So they would just ask me to get the kitten out real quick. And so I kind of figured out how to do adoptions that way. And then when I was in college, I just kept involving myself in as many extracurriculars as I could. So I kept finding volunteering opportunities or veterinary internships and things like that. So the local rescue would do adoption events every Saturday at the local, the Petco, like the big mega pet store in my neighborhood. So I would go there and meet all the cats. And that's when I met my cat and I just kind of adopted him on the spot. And my roommate was really into cats as well. So I kind of got even deeper into the cat world because of her. She enabled all of that. So and then I was just part of it permanently.
Cool. Okay, so how did you go from rescue and adoption to focusing so much of your effort on spay and neuter?
I learned the importance of those programs through the volunteering activities that I did. So even at the shelter, I would see how many animals would just keep coming in every day. And that was in California. And then when I was in the US, I was doing a behavior internship at yet another shelter that was in Massachusetts. And there was such a difference in just the number of community animals in both the states, like between California and Massachusetts. And it just made me realize the sheer difference that the size of the community animal population can make on even like shelter, you know, admission rates or intake rates and things. So in the New England area, they would often sort of import, not or yeah, they would get animals from other states because the other states had it far worse, you know, in terms of their population sizes. And I kind of sort of realized then the systemic issues at play with, you know, like lack of spay neuter in the US, where it was for the most part mostly pets that needed to be spayed and neutered. Mm-hmm. And then comparing and contrasting that with the state of it in Mumbai, where our community animal populations, I mean, they're on the streets. So I sort of learned the effect of, I saw it firsthand, the effect of TNR, where, you know, in California, there were so many animals yet on the streets. People were still finding cats on the streets compared to at least in Boston, where there's not so many. But of course, there's still cats there. But yeah, I saw the effects of TNR firsthand. I'm like, this clearly works.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. There's a lot of TNR works now in America, and a lot of people don't realize how large the free living cat populations are. They, I think, have normalized, oh, if you see a cat on the street, you put them in the shelter, and then like that's the problem solved, rather than focusing on TNR. But still, like the movement for TNR has grown exponentially over the years, but still it's never enough. So yeah, it's interesting that you saw it in both places. And we're really huge fans of the Feline Foundation's work. I mean, you guys cover so many bases and you have quite a strategic approach to what you do. You focus a lot on spay and neuter as addressing one of the root causes of the issue of cats needing help. And so, yeah, we'd love to learn a little bit more about that. Can you tell us what it's like running a cat population management program in Mumbai and what your average day looks like as the executive director?
Sure. Thank you so much for the kind words. That means a lot. Yeah. So in Mumbai, on the one hand, maybe it's sort of like a plus that there wasn't really a system here to begin with, which means that we could sort of build it up from scratch how we wanted to do it. And we had the help of, you know, some people who helped us sort of lay out our organization's plans and blueprints so that we weren't going into it too blindly. So that was a massive help. We had someone help us with our, you know, theoretical framework and everything. And we really knew that we wanted to address the community cat population first thing, because we knew from our own experience that the rescue and adoption model is not going to work over here, because there's no official census. So I can't even tell you how many cats there officially are, but we think there's like a million cats. Because there's probably at least 5 cats to each dog, and there's around 100,000 dogs. So, yeah.
Wow. That's a lot. Yeah.
It's a lot. I'm trying not to be too pessimistic about it. Maybe there aren't a million. Who knows? But yeah. assuming there are a million, right, there's really nothing to do but spay neuter. So we knew that, you know, from the get-go that population management, population control would have to be one of our keystone programs.
Mm-hmm.
Although it is a little, you know, easy to get caught up in sort of the emotions of it all and try and focus on the rescue aspect, which, so it took us a little while to get there, but we started investing in our spay neuter program. That was our first, when we started out as an organization, we spent some time, like I said, laying out the theoretical framework, but at the same time, we were taking cats however we could to get neutered, even if it was through private appointments at, you know, other veterinary clinics. We didn't have a clinic when it was started out. And our first priority was to get our, you know, our own clinic space so that we could start spay neuter on a bigger scale.
Mm-hmm.
And we just kind of kept scaling up our operations from there on. Having the blueprint, like the logical framework, really helped, because it initially made it a little bit more difficult for ourselves to, you know, sit and do a baseline survey of, you know, our neighborhoods and then go, you know, do spay neuter and then do an interim survey. It felt like an impossible task because our own neighborhood in our baseline survey showed that there were like 2,000 cats there, and that was such a daunting number. And we didn't have funds when we first started out. And some part of me was like, oh my God, is this ever going to happen? But it took a few years, but we're getting there. We've now sterilized 80% of the cats in the same neighborhood.
Wow. That's incredible. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Everything we do is, we do it very manually. We don't have a lot of trapping equipment here. Yeah, we don't have like cat traps. So we bought one from the US and we had a friend bring them over.
Yeah.
But we just have that one trap, and then we manufactured a drop trap or a kick trap or whatever you call it. We manufactured one. So we have two traps in our possession. So we mostly catch cats by hand. That's what I meant by manual. So we just, the cats here are, for the most part, really friendly. They're all socialized towards people. Many cats are like completely feral here.
Okay.
So those ones, it's a little easier to catch because you can either sort of trick them, you know, by luring them inside a cat carrier with food.
Yeah.
Or if they're so friendly, sometimes they just let you pick them up and put them in, or we just like scruff them on the back of the neck and then put them in. So our cat catcher catches the cats by hand. Even the community members all do it by hand. That is, I would say, like a biggest hurdle, I think, for sterilizing the cats, because for the most part, community members are not trained in this kind of thing. And there's that fear aspect as well. They don't know how cats would react. A lot of them don't understand cat body language. So they might like cats, but they feel very reluctant to trap them themselves.
But I think that's something, even like people who listen to this and they don't know, you know, how to trap cats, or even like, I think just even like just feeding them and getting them used to touch is such a big step.
Yeah, that's a major thing.
Yeah, because then when we go in to trap them, even if they want to trap them, then if they don't have a trap, they can still like take them with their hands, right? Or help them and go in the carrier. So just getting the stray cat used to the being touched, I think, is already such a good point. So yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, it's just, just the fact that they're socializing the cats is a huge thing. And which brings up another issue. There are very strong animal lovers here who feed cats, and they've been doing it for years. Whereas our citywide cat sterilization programs are still very new. So they started just a few years ago. So for the longest time, these people who would feed the cats every day had no accessible resources for neutering. So if they did get cats neutered, they would do it out of their own, you know, funds at like private clinics, which are definitely like on the higher side of cost. And so they weren't able to do it at a large scale. Like people were not generally neutering cats on a large scale before organizations started doing spay neuter with the help of the government. So what happened was it sort of became like a big group of people who were doing this on their own, and a lot of them are now very frustrated because of the work that they've had to do by themselves, you know, operating on an individual basis without help for so long. And there's also like another community who's against these people because they see it as the feeders are the source of the problem. So they think the feeders are the reason why there's so many cats. So there a lot of people are against animal feeding, but luckily, at least the laws are on our side there. So it is illegal to ban anyone from feeding stray animals. Even in private premises, you cannot ban, say, housing residents from feeding cats or dogs.
Okay.
But that doesn't stop people from trying. So there's all these different stakeholders. So there's people who are really frustrated with the overgrown cat population because, you know, there's cats everywhere, and some people are against that. They create noise, or maybe they disturb the peace, or maybe they, you know, pee on people's cars and things like that. So people are, you know, some people are against cats. And so they're also against the people who are feeding the cats, but maybe don't see it as the people who are feeding the cats are actually doing the job of sterilizing them as well. So getting everybody on the same page is a little difficult. So that is another thing that we do, is we try and educate people on the importance of sterilization, but also the importance of letting people just feed the cats, because if they don't feed the cats, then they won't be friendly enough for us to trap them. So that is some kind of constant education that is going on. Yeah.
I think that's a really important point you raise, and probably an international stereotype that like the people who feed the cats are either these like old, crazy people just running around the street doing something strange, or they don't play a vital role. And therefore, a lot of efforts, whether it's general community cat care or sterilization, are not done with the feeders, who are actually, as you pointed out before, crucial to socializing cats, trapping them, having a regular feeding schedule so that you know when and where to go and catch them, knowing their behavior patterns, and knowing, you know, who's given birth to who and who might be pregnant now and who's a priority, and all of these really important things we need to know in order to sterilize all of the cats that they take care of. So yeah, it's a really important point. I want to ask a little bit about how you've managed to get, because you've been quite successful as an organization to getting people of the community more involved, educating about sterilization, growing your volunteer team who help with like mapping and reporting cats and things like that. Can you talk a little bit about the role that community members have played and how you've engaged them?
Sure. So our sterilization program would be impossible. I mean, it would just not work without the community's help, right? Because we have one cat catcher and we sterilize 400 cats a month and she does not catch 400 cats. So it's the community largely who brings the cats to us. And it's, I mean, this city is full of such amazing people who have such positive attitudes towards, I mean, I know what I just said about some people being against it, but for the most part, this is a very pro-animal welfare city. And we're really grateful for that. People are very invested in the care of their animals, especially if they're the feeders. So the feeders do most of the cat catching and, you know, bringing the cats to us. Because they've been taking care of, you know, all their neighborhood animals for so long, like I said. So they're very invested in their health. And they've seen, like, at first hand what happens when colonies are not sterilized. And they also don't want their own neighborhood cat colonies to increase in size because they'll be the ones to take care of the kittens and things like that. So they've not been difficult to motivate to get cats to us. Yeah, just one difficulty is if, you know, say their neighborhood animals are sterilized, it's a little difficult to get people outside of those neighborhoods to bring cats to us. So, you know, if I'm feeding cats in my area, I'm not exactly going to be motivated to go to another area and catch cats and bring them to the Feline Foundation. So what we have to do is we have to reach enough people because these guys do it on a voluntary basis. So when they get their 8 to 10 cats sterilized, they're not going to be motivated to go and find more cats to bring to us, even if we ask. So that's one thing. So yeah, usually if the feeder's cats are already sterilized, then they stop coming. They don't bring more cats to us.
So how do you do, what do you do in that case? Do you try to like do reaching out? Do you go to like the other communities and like try to speak to them?
Yeah. So we go in the neighborhoods, we put up posters, we talk to local shopkeepers, business owners, we talk to, you know, the housing societies, and we always ask around, are there any cats here? Who feeds them? Do you know what time the feeder comes? Or if there's no feeder, then we just say, how many cats do you think there are?
Yeah.
Okay, can you help us out with sterilization? And if there isn't someone there that is actively feeding the cats, then usually they expect us to come catch the cats because it is like a public service kind of thing. They see it as the government's role is to ensure the sterilization of the community animals, and we are one of the partnering organizations, so they kind of see it as our responsibility to do that. So we have to be a bit careful with how we utilize our cat catcher's time. So we try and make it so that she goes into the neighborhoods where there's not any community members who can help us. And we keep trying to increase our community database of people who can help us. So we keep revisiting areas and talking to the people on ground.
Yeah.
And there's also people who just sign up as volunteers at our organization. Even if they're not from our area, they sign up for these kinds of things like the poster drives or the surveys. So they help us out that way as well.
Yeah, cool. Can we talk about the surveys a little bit more? Because I think you've had quite a lot of people volunteer for this. And it's also a very special point to what makes what you guys do strategic and effective. Like the fact that you even know that you've sterilized 80% of these neighborhoods, that's because you've done surveys, right? And you've engaged people to come and volunteer for that. Can you talk a little bit about what they do and what the surveys look like?
Sure. So for the surveys, we start out by mapping the area that we're going to work in. So we fully map out the next project area that we're going to work on for the next few months or years or however long it takes. And we plan the surveys so that we cover every street, because the purpose of the surveys is not just to get an overall picture of how big the cat population is, but also give us like micro data on where the cats are actually staying. Mm-hmm. So we sort of, poll in our volunteer group like way ahead of time to see if we can get between 10 to 20 volunteers for the survey. And we split one big zone into smaller subzones. and we send out one team to each subzone, and we tell them, make sure you're covering every street, make sure you're talking to every building, every shop. No corner of this area should go unexplored, because that gives us the data on where the cats are. So it doesn't just tell us how many cats in our total, but also where exactly they are. We also we create a WhatsApp group for this, and we tell them to send lots of pictures. And if there's like high priority cats, like pregnant cats or lactating mothers, or just like even female cats in general, or if there's an area where there's like multiple cats in one place, then they send us the location of that spot. So as soon as we do the survey, we start catching so that we don't forget, you know, where all the cats are. And so that the people there don't forget us. So if we go and do a survey and we talk to them and we introduce ourselves as the Feline Foundation, you know, here to help with sterilization, et cetera, they shouldn't forget us before we go back to that area again. Yeah, so for us, it is the area that we're in. We're in an area called Andheri West, and it's the largest suburb in Mumbai, and largest in terms of size as well as human population. So there's also a really big cat population here because of the density of, you know, the actual human population as well as the kind of sort of micro environments that are throughout the region. There's a lot of fishing villages, there's a lot of fish markets, a lot of meat markets, there's like commercial sections and industrial sections and residential sections, high density housing, low density housing. So we have to get to know it ourselves as well. So we couldn't do like sort of like a transect kind of survey, because we just had to get in every street and introduce ourselves. That's sort of how we plan the survey. And we try to do the survey in one day. If that's not possible, we try and at least complete the entire zone within a month's time. But we complete like one subzone in one day at least. And we pick the same time so that we have like similar conditions for the survey, so that the data is comparable. So we go around the same time of day. And we go with like a lot of cat food in tins, and we just rattle them so that the cats come out. And we give instructions to our volunteers on how to search for the cats. So if they see parked cars, they're supposed to bend down and look underneath and, like, you know, keep checking the roofs, because they could be on the roofs as well.
Right. You mentioned transect surveys. So when we're talking about surveying and mapping and counting, there are a few different kind of like standardized methodologies, right? So transect surveys are something that the ICAM model talks about, right? There's also an approach from DC Cat Count, which people use to, as you say, not just find like a census amount of population, but also where they are and where they have to neuter cats. Is there a kind of methodology that you follow that is kind of like one of these standardized methods, or have you sort of created your own over your time of trying this out and seeing what works?
We created our own, but sure, there are other organizations doing it like us. So we have like a survey sheet, which is just one paper, and we have two sections to it. One is the population data, and then one is also like the welfare status or the health conditions.
Mm.
So we call that vulnerable stray cats. That's our term for it. So at the top in the population data section, we put a tally mark for every cat that we see, cat, kitten, whatever. We put a tally mark either in the sterilized or unsterilized section. And within those sections, we have male, female, and unknown or can't tell. So we try and track the gender data as well. So every cat gets marked in the population section. And then below that, in the vulnerable stray cat section, we mark if a cat meets any of the following conditions, which are sick, injured, geriatric, disabled, infant, or pregnant or lactating. So these six we have six columns for that. So not every cat gets put in these in this section. It's just if a cat is one of the following. So that way, at the end of completing an entire zone, we have the total number of cats, the percentage that are sterilized or unsterilized, and also the percentage that are vulnerable, which tells us the overall health of the population. And we do this exact survey at the end term as well.
Okay, cool. And you said you tried to go back how regularly?
So that depends on that also. Sorry, during the survey, we also collect contacts of people who can help us with sterilization, or even if they won't help us with sterilization, we just note down any contacts of feeders or anyone who can give us information on the cats. So we start, you know, utilizing their help. And we start pretty much immediately, and depending on the survey data, so if there's a lot of cats, so if there's like more than 100, then we sort of know that this is like a high priority situation. So we go there very regularly, maybe like twice a week. If there's fewer cats, so if there's just like 10 to 20 cats in this subzone or zone, usually subzone, then those cats are also a little more difficult to find because they're probably like spread out and there's just like single cats here and there. So then we go as and when the community members are available to help us out, because usually the cats will come out at a particular time because there's one person there feeding them. Or so we have to sort of talk to those, like those areas are harder to do than the areas where there's like a high density of cats and you can just catch like 10 at once. So some areas we'll never stop visiting. So even the zones that we've completed 80% or more is what we target, right? So even the zones where we've completed 80%, we are still revisiting those zones because unfortunately what's happening is people are now coming and dumping animals there. So you know, but that problem will continue. I mean, we will be stuck in our neighborhood forever if we don't venture out of here and we do neighboring areas because those cats are coming from somewhere. So when we finish a zone, we sort of shift it to what we call the maintenance phase, which is we tell the community members that we've been working with that, look, we have one cat catcher, you know, she's not going to be able to come pick up single cats here and there. We really rely on your help now to bring the cats to us. She will come if there's a cat that's really difficult to catch, or if you have more than three or four cats in one area, and then she will take the time to come. But otherwise, can you please bring the cats to us? And this is what I was saying, right? Like, it's difficult to motivate people to catch those cats for you if they're not their cats, if they're not the cats that they are feeding. So this is a struggle that we have in the neighborhood of Versova where we are at, right? We sterilized, when we did our end-down survey in March, we counted 80% of the cats as sterilized, or 81%. And then the very next week, because we remembered where the unsterilized cats were, because we just did the survey, I think we went and caught another like 20 or 30. And then by the end of the month, we had caught like another 100. But there's still cats there. And for us, it's like, oh my God, when will it end? We thought we sterilized all the cats, but people just come and leave cats there. So yeah, we have to, you know, we said like, okay, we have to put a cutoff somewhere. We can't just keep spending all our resources on the neighborhood of Versova when literally the surrounding neighborhoods are so much worse. So that's probably where the cats are coming from. So we've shifted that neighborhood to the maintenance phase. We rely on the community's help and we're sterilizing in the surrounding zones now.
Yeah. I mean, there are so many reasons why cats can show up in areas that we've been neutering, right? So like you said, abandoned cats, or especially in very chaotic urban environments where all species populations are really densely packed in, they migrate from one block to another. I mean, it's not that far apart, right? And you know, there's regular feeding there, there's shelters, there's other cats. And so of course they move around, which I think is a really important point to illustrate what you've said of why it's so vital to go back.
We do need to take a quick break and we'll be back in a second.
Real people, real stories.
Our little dog developed this lymph problem, but the chemotherapy lasted for 6 months, started developing more lymph nodes. So I thought I'd just try carnivore. The lymph nodes started to go down. Then I took him into the vet to have him checked out, and there was no signs at all inside.
My cat had issues that developed in his eye, and 3 months later, my veterinarian said, let's go ahead and remove the eye. I heard the carnivore on advertising. So I said, you know what? I'm going to order this product. They did the procedure. They did all the tests, and they said, I don't know what you did. This product saved his eye.
I've got a Labrador. He could hardly lift herself up off the floor. The treatment was chemotherapy. That's when I said, this could be the ticket. About 3 weeks, you could tell she was very alert. She was going on 5 mile walk. She is just like prime again.
Call 866-836-8735. That's 866-836-8735. Or visit carnivore.com. That's carnivora.com.
Use promo code PETLIFE at checkout for 15% off your order at carnivora.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Okay, we are back and we are going to talk a little bit more now about, you described you do like an initial surveying act to understand the landscape of what you're getting into in that area. And then you go in and intervene with sterilization. And then you're regularly going back very frequently to catch any other unsterilized cats and to see how much more work you have left, right? So if 80% is the goal, can you share any like successes you've seen from using this more strategic approach? Like any maybe specific cases or generally some trends that you've seen that kind of look like success to you, which you can attribute to the strategic part of what you've been doing?
Yeah. So doing it at a high volume really helps. Sort of concentrating your efforts on one area really helps. In our interim survey, we did see a fall in the population as a whole. And that was a nice surprise for us because it took us around 2 years to complete the Warsaw area. And that was mostly due to lack of funding. Otherwise, we would have done it like a lot sooner probably. But even so, the population still decreased, even though we were kind of doing it intermittently as we had funding. The population still decreased. And we also saw a drop in the vulnerable stray cats percentage, which was really nice. So we had fewer like female cats giving birth, fewer kittens. There were fewer injured and sick animals as well. There were more geriatric and more disabled cats. So I don't know if that means that, you know, maybe the cat population is aging better, and if it means that there's more disabled animals because they receive medical care and, you know, they were treated sort of like we release like cats who we've done amputations for and things like that, right? If they have caretakers. So we got to see like some of those as well, like that cats that have definitely had, you know, their eye enucleated or, you know, their leg amputated. So we have seen positive effects of sort of doing like a high intensity sterilization activity. And now that we have more funding for our sterilization program, I think it will be even better. So like I said, Warsowa was a huge population of 2,000 plus with cats constantly coming in from other areas. And we did it not very intensely at the start, and it still saw positive results. And we've got feedback from the community as well. So they were themselves reporting that they had less work to do now because they had less cats to rescue because the cats were overall doing much better. So that was great. And there's other areas as well. So there's another neighborhood called Four Bungalows. I don't know why it's called that, but it's called Four Bungalows. And this had a huge cat population as well and a lot of feeders living over here. And it's got a fish market, and people over here think it is okay to leave cats at the fish market. So if there's too many cats in their building, and they might pick up the cats and leave them at a fish market thinking the cats will have access to food. But of course, we know that, you know, that's not the case. So this area keeps having this problem of having new animals dumped there all the time. And our sterilization efforts is still helping this area a lot. So a lot of the feeders, so we call them into a meeting. So we call it the Care Collective meeting. So we invite the feeders to our center for a big meeting, and we explain our program, and we say, okay, our target for completing Four Bungalows is, you know, end August. So we have, how many cats do you have? 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 Like, okay, so together we have 250 cats, you know, plus another 100, because in our survey, we actually counted 300. Okay, so you know, this is how many cats we need to sterilize per month until August to, you know, achieve our target, which means each of you need to be bringing in 7 cats per week. So we kind of just like show them the numbers, and they get a little motivated to help because they realize that, you know, maybe the struggle will end if they sterilize all the cats. And it was nice to be able to build a positive relationship with these people, because for us, it was a new neighborhood, and we started, you know, relationships with this community, and it's already helped the area of Four Bungalows a lot. And we'll be doing our interim survey of this area soon as well.
That's incredible. I actually have a question. How old do the kittens have to be for you to sterilize them? Do you work with age or weight?
Age and weight, both. So like around 5 months old is when we sterilize them here.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So with female cats, it's before their first heat, and with male cats, it's after the testes have descended.
Yeah, once you can actually like see them. And do you ear tip them?
We ear notch them. So that's what we do in India. We put like a V-shaped notch rather than a straight across tip.
Oh.
And I know some countries do the tip method. And here in India, we do the notch method. And I know the standard practice is a straight across thing, and people say that, you know, they're able to identify an ear tip much better than an ear notch, but I actually find it easier to identify an ear notch.
Yeah.
Especially from a really long distance, and if the cat's like turning its head, even from the side, like a V-shaped notch is sort of like unmistakable. So whatever works, as long as people are doing it.
Yeah.
Whatever works.
Yeah, I actually agree with you. I spent so much time kneeling on the ground under cars trying to like look at the cat's ears in different angles, because sometimes they don't do it straight across, or like the hair has grown over it. And yeah, it still kind of looks like a point. So it's not very helpful sometimes. And then other vets like take off more of the ear tip. So it depends. But yeah, that's really interesting.
And also sometimes you have cats with the tips of the ears are gone because of
biting or
some kind of, biting or some sort of ear infection, or like they had a hematoma or something. So usually the notch is something that looks very man-made and artificial. It doesn't really look like they got into a cat fight, which those ones look a lot more raggedy, and the ones that we do is a very sharp across like V. So that's sort of unmistakable to us. And we do it on the right ear, I think. So we kind of even get to identify the cats that we neuter.
Yeah. I think, as you said, as long as something is being done to identify them, I mean, every place has their different way of working. And as long as it works for you, then that's what matters.
Yeah, definitely. As long as people are sterilizing, just do it. Whatever works for you.
Yeah. Something I want to add to that point, which I think some people might note depending on what country they're in. So when we were talking about cat trapping, for example, like you obviously have a very skilled trapper and you have cats in your context which are much more friendly compared to cats in Greece, for example. I would never be able to actually grab them with my hands, and so every place therefore has different methods of trapping and catching based on whatever that context looks like, right? What's interesting, I think, to point out is there has been more discussion around scruffing specifically, and also using nets, and how we try as much as possible not to scruff or physically handle cats. But that's generally coming from people who have access to trapping equipment. And something you explained is you don't, right? You had to make a drop down trap. And so in Greece, for example, we advocate for not scruffing and grabbing cats because we have access to equipment. But I think that's a really important point, especially when we're talking about projects in all different parts of the world, not to just go in and judging like how someone does something, but to understand the cultural context of why you guys do it that way, why we might do it a different way in a different place. So it really depends on all of the details of that situation. And there's not like one right way over another as long as we're prioritizing welfare.
Yeah, definitely. Also, I think in your case, I mean, if you're saying that there's a lot more, you know, feral or unfriendly cats, then I mean, I think they would be a lot more stressed out by human handling anyway. So I completely understand why different countries have different practices, like you said. And at least in our case, the cats are very used to our presence. So it is them being handled for a few seconds before they're put in cat carriers. So they're less stressed out, I think, than an unsocialized cat would be.
Pallavi, yep. Any for people listening to us who are around Mumbai and around the Mumbai area, any tips for them if they want to start getting involved, or if they want to help you, or if they want to help the community cats?
Yeah, there's many ways they could help. They could, support our organization. They could volunteer. They could just help by monitoring their local cat population. They could get into feeding, but even if they don't want to start feeding, you know, the local animals. And I get why some people maybe don't want to do it. I don't do it because I don't want any animals like relying on me too much, right? I don't want to start something and then not be able to continue it. But if they could help sterilize the cats in their area, that too would be great. So if they know any feeders in their area, they should definitely let them know that we do free sterilization at the Feline Foundation, especially from this neighborhood. And yeah, they can also start learning how to catch cats. We'll teach them. They can come. We'll teach them.
Amazing. And for everybody else listening to you, where can they follow your work? Can you share your social media and maybe your email address if anyone has any questions?
Yeah. So we're called the Feline Foundation. You can check us out on our website. We're on Instagram as well by the same name, and LinkedIn as well, and YouTube.
Every social platform.
Yes. Try to be everywhere talking about cats.
Yeah, that's what you have to do. Well, thank you so much, Pallavi, for joining us. We really appreciate you taking the time, sharing your experience, and giving us all those tips.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I will say one thing that I talked a lot about all the things that make it easier for us to sterilize cats over here. One thing is our local municipal government is really supportive of cat sterilization. They're the only municipal government in India to give funds for sterilizing cats. And I think that's great. And I think that this is a kind of coordination that needs to happen everywhere. It cannot just be a community that's doing it or nonprofits that are doing it or just the government or just the animal control or whatever the setup is in each country, right? It needs to be like a group effort, because it's such a big thing to do, and it will just be an endless problem unless coordination happens on that kind of like citywide scale.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's even more important to point out right now, because we've recently learned about the government issued rules around taking all of the dogs off of the streets across India and putting them in shelters. And that doesn't matter if they're sterilized or not. And this is obviously a huge, huge setback. And people have been doing work to sterilize thousands and thousands of dogs and cats for so many years. And it just undoes so much, right? Because those communities of dogs and colonies of cats are really vital to keeping the population stable. And so, to your point, collaborating with government groups and bodies like municipalities is really important to keep the focus on sterilization rather than these other methods, which don't work, like snatching animals from the street and putting them in shelters. Yeah. It doesn't work.
Yeah, the backlash against that decision was so huge that they revised the order, and they've now said that all dogs should be sterilized, vaccinated, and released back in their territories. There's still some gray areas about, it was a huge win when they revised the court order. There's still some gray areas there. You know, they've said that dogs who are aggressive or suspected to have rabies cannot be released back. So that definition would have to be clarified. And they've also said that people should not feed animals until designated feeding areas have been given, which is also like really difficult. Like, how are you supposed to do that? So there's some gray areas, but it's still overall like a really huge thing that people are talking about sterilization on a nationwide scale. That's like amazing.
Yes, things are moving.
Yes.
That's what we want. Well, we love being inspired by incredible people such as you, Pallavi.
Likewise. Thank you so much.
We're running out of time and we need to wrap it up. But thank you so much for joining us on this adventure that we're really excited about. And would love
thank
to
you.
Hear about your experience. People were listening to us. So send us a DM on either Saving Lives with 2 A's or Travel Animal Rescue on Instagram. See you all at our next episode. And in the meantime, stay out of trouble and keep trapping to save the streets one animal at a time.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.